brown in. Can we go right now to fix my hair? He pulls the clean shirt on, and I'm disappointed that I now have to stare at a boring gray t-shirt instead of the masterpiece beneath it. What are these ridiculous, shallow thoughts that are plaguing my brain? I don't care about muscles or six-packs or skin that looks so flawless it makes me want to chase his father down and give him a high five for creating such an impeccable son. I clear my throat. Yeah, we can go now. I don't have plans. Way to appear more pathetic, Auburn. Admit you have nothing to do on a Saturday after ogling his half-naked body. Real attractive. He picks the baseball cap up and puts it back on before stepping into his shoes.
Ready?
I nod and turn to head back down the stairs. I'm beginning to hate these stairs. When he opens the front door, the sun is so bright I start to question my own mortality and entertain the thought that maybe I became a vampire overnight. I cover my eyes with my arms and stop walking. Damn it, that's bright. If this is a hangover, I have no idea how anyone could become an alcoholic. Owen closes the door and takes a few steps toward me.
Here,
he says. He places his cap on my head and pulls it down close to my eyes.
That should help.
He smiles, and I get a glimpse of that crooked left incisor, and it makes me smile, despite the fact that my head hates me for moving any facial muscles. I lift my hand and adjust the hat, pulling it down a little more. Thank you. Owen opens the door, and I look at my feet to avoid the assault from the sun. I step outside and wait for him to lock it, and then we begin walking. Luckily, we're walking in the opposite direction of the sun, so I'm able to look up and pay attention to where we're going.
How are you feeling?
Owen asks. It takes me about 6 steps to answer him. Confused, I say. Why in the world do people drink if it makes them feel like this the next day? I continue counting steps, and it takes him about 8 before he answers me.
It's an escape,
he says. I glance at him, but quickly look straight ahead again, because turning my head doesn't feel so hot either. I get that, but is escaping for a few hours really worth the hangover the next day? He's quiet for 8 steps. 9, 10, 11.
I guess that would depend on the reality you're trying to escape.
That's deep, Owen. I would think my reality is pretty bad, but definitely not bad enough to endure this every morning. But maybe that would explain what turns people into alcoholics. You drink to escape the emotional pain you're in, and then the next day you do it all over again to get rid of the physical pain. So you drink more, and you drink more often, and pretty soon you're drunk all the time, and it becomes just as bad, if not worse, than the reality you were attempting to escape from in the first place. Only now you need an escape from the escape, so you find something even stronger than the alcohol. And maybe that's what turns alcoholics into addicts. A vicious cycle.
You want to talk about it?
He asks. I don't make the mistake of looking at him again, but I'm curious where he's going with his question. Talk about what?
What you were trying to escape last night,
he says, glancing at me. I shake my head. No, Owen, I don't. I look at him this time, even though it hurts my head to do so. You want to talk about why you're shutting down the studio? My question catches him by surprise. I can see it in his eyes before he looks away.
No, Auburn, I don't.
We both stop walking when we reach my salon. I put my hand on the door and take his cap off my head. I place it back on top of his head, even though I have to lift up onto the tips of my toes to do it. Great talk. Let's shut up now and fix your hair. He holds the door open for me to walk in first.
Sounds a lot like what I had in mind.
We enter the salon and I motion for him to follow me. I know now that his hair will be a lot more cooperative if it's wet, so I take him straight back to the room with the sinks. I can feel Emery watching me as we make our way past her, and it makes me curious as to why she didn't freak out that I didn't show up last night, or at the least call with a code word. Before she has the chance to yell at me, I offer up an apology as I pass her station. Sorry I didn't call last night, I say quietly. She glances at Owen trailing behind me.
No worries. Someone made sure I knew you were alive.
I immediately turn and look at Owen, and it's obvious with his shrug that he's the one responsible for Emery being notified. I'm not sure if I like this, because it's just another considerate thing of him to do, which makes it even harder to stay mad at him. When we reach the back room, all the sinks are empty, so I walk to the farthest one.
I adjust the height of it and then motion for Owen to sit. I adjust the temperature of the water and watch as he leans his head back into the groove of the sink. I keep my focus trained on anything but his face while I begin to wet his hair. He keeps his eyes on me the entire time I'm working my hands through it, creating a thick lather with the shampoo. I've been doing this for over a month now, and the majority of the clients at this salon are women. I've never noticed how intimate washing someone's hair can be. Then again, no one else stares so unabashedly while I'm trying to work. Knowing he's watching my every move makes me incredibly nervous. My pulse speeds up and my hands grow fidgety. After a while, he opens his mouth to speak.
"Are you mad at me?"
he asks quietly. My hands pause what they're doing. It's such a juvenile question to ask. I feel like we're kids and we've been giving each other the silent treatment. But for such a simple question, it's a really hard one to answer. I was mad at him 3 weeks ago. I was mad at him last night. But right now, I don't feel angry. Actually being near him and seeing how he looks at me makes me think he must have had a very valid excuse for not showing up, and it had nothing to do with how he felt about me. I just wish he would explain himself. I shrug as I begin to work the shampoo through his hair again. "I was," I tell him. "But you did warn me, didn't you? You said everything else comes before the girls. So mad might be a bit harsh. Disappointed, yes. Annoyed, yes. But I'm not really mad." That was way too much of an explanation, one he didn't really deserve.
"I did say that my work is my number one priority, but I never said I was an asshole. I let a girl know beforehand if I need space to work."
I glance at him briefly and then give my attention to the bottle of conditioner. I squirt some in my hands and spread it through his hair. "So you have the courtesy to warn your girlfriends that you're about to disappear, but you don't have the courtesy to warn the girls who aren't screwing you?" I'm working the conditioner through his hair, not being nearly as gentle as I should be. I think I changed my mind. I'm mad now. He shakes his head and sits straight up, turning around to face me.
"That's not what I meant, Auburn."
Water is dripping down the side of his face, down his neck.
"I meant that I didn't disappear on you because of my art. It wasn't that type of situation. I don't want you to think I didn't want to come back, because I did."
My jaw is tense and I'm grinding my teeth together. "You're dripping everywhere," I say as I pull him back to the sink. I pick up the sprayer and begin rinsing his hair. Again, his eyes are on me the whole time, but I don't want to make eye contact with him. I don't want to care what his excuse is, because I honestly don't want to be involved with anyone right now. But damn it, I care. I want to know why he didn't show up, and why he hasn't made an effort to contact me at all since then. I finish rinsing his hair and wash the suds down the drain. "You can sit up." He sits up and I grab a towel and squeeze the excess water out of his hair. I toss the towel in the hamper on the other side of the room and begin to walk around him, but he grabs my wrist and stops me. He stands up, still holding onto my wrist. I don't try to pull away from him. I know I should, but I'm too curious to see what his next move is to care what I should be doing. I also don't pull away because I love how the slightest touch from him leaves me breathless.
"I lied to you,"
he says quietly. I don't like those words, and I certainly don't like the truthfulness on his face right now.
"I didn't."
His eyes narrow in contemplation as he exhales slowly.
"I didn't come back because I didn't see the point. I'm moving on Monday."
He says the rest of the sentence like he can't get it out fast enough. I don't like this confession. At all. "You're moving?" My voice is full of disappointment. I feel like I was just dumped and I don't even have a boyfriend. "You're moving?" Emery asks. I spin around and she's walking a client to one of the sinks, staring at Owen, waiting for an answer. I face Owen again and can see that this moment of truth is over for now. I walk away from him and head out of the room toward my station. He follows quietly. Neither of us speaks as I comb through his hair and try to figure out how I'm going to fix the mess I made of it last night. I'll have to cut most of it off. He'll look so different, and I'm not sure I'm happy about his having much shorter hair. "It'll be short," I say. "I messed it up pretty bad." He laughs, and his laugh is exactly what I need in this moment. It alleviates the heaviness of what was happening back in the other room. Why would you let me do this to you? He smiles up at me.
It was your birthday. I would have done anything you asked.
Flirtatious Owen is back, and I both love it and hate it. I take a step away from him to study his hair. When I'm positive I know how to fix it, I turn around and grab the scissors and comb, which are right where they're supposed to be. I remember dropping them on the floor last night, and it occurs to me that Emery more than likely walked into a mess this morning. I didn't sweep up what I did cut of Owen's hair before we left the salon, but it's gone, so I'll have to thank her later. I begin cutting his hair, and I do my best to focus on that and not so much on him. Somewhere between the beginning of the haircut and this moment, Emery returned to her station. She's now seated in her own salon chair, watching us. She kicks off the cabinet with her foot and begins spinning.
Are you moving forever, or just for a little while?
Emery asks. Owen looks in my direction and raises an eyebrow. Oh, I say, forgetting they haven't been formally introduced yet. I point to Emery. Owen, this is Emery, my strange roommate. He nods slightly and looks in her direction without turning too much. I think he's nervous I'll mess his hair up even more, so he's being as still as he can possibly be.
A few months, probably,
he says in response to her.
It's not permanent. A work thing.
Emery frowns.
That's too bad, she says.
I already like you a whole lot better than the other guy. My eyes grow wide and my head swings in her direction. Emery? I can't believe she just said that. Owen slowly turns his attention back to me and cocks an eyebrow.
Other guy?
I shake my head and wave her off. She's misinformed. There is no other guy. I glare at her. There can't be another guy when there's not even a guy. Oh, please. She catches the cabinet with her foot and stops spinning. She points to Owen. He's a guy. A guy you apparently spent the night with last night. A guy I think is a lot nicer than the other guy, and a guy I think you're sad is moving. What is wrong with this girl? I can feel Owen staring at me, but I'm too embarrassed to look at him. I glare at Emery again instead. I was actually beginning to respect you because you never gossip. It's not gossip when I'm saying it to both your faces. It's called conversation. We're discussing how you guys are attracted to each other and you want to fall in love like... She pauses for a moment and then shakes her head. I suck at metaphors. But you want to fall in love, but now he has to move and you're sad. But you don't have to be sad because, thanks to me, you now know he's only moving for a few months, not forever. Just don't give in to the other guy first. Owen is laughing, but I'm not. I grab the blow dryer to drown out her words, and I finish styling his now short hair, which actually looks really good. His eyes stand out even more. A lot more. They look brighter. So much so that I'm finding it really hard not to stare at them. I turn off the blow dryer and Emery immediately begins speaking again. So, when are you moving, Owen? He stares at me when he answers her.
Monday.
Emery slaps the arm of her chair. That's perfect timing, she says. Auburn is off today and tomorrow. You guys can spend the whole weekend together. I don't tell her to shut up because I know it wouldn't stop her. I step behind Owen and untie the smock wrapped around him and then shove it into a drawer, all while giving her a death stare.
I actually like that idea,
Owen says. His voice makes me fear for the safety of the world because I'm single-handedly depleting the oxygen supply with all the deep breaths I take every time I hear it. I look at him in the mirror, and he's leaning forward in the salon chair, staring at my reflection. He wants to spend the weekend with me? Hell no. If that happens, then it means other things will happen, and I don't know if I'm ready for other things yet. Besides, I'll be busy with... Crap. I'm not busy at all. This is the weekend Lydia goes to Pasadena. There goes that excuse. Look at her, trying to come up with excuses, Emery says, amused. They're both staring at me now, waiting on me to respond. I grab Owen's hat and put it on my head and walk straight for the front door. I don't owe Owen a weekend, and I definitely don't owe Emery a sideshow. I swing open the door and begin walking in the direction of my apartment, which also happens to be the direction of Owen's studio, so I'm not surprised when he appears next to me. Our steps fall into sync, and I begin to count them. I wonder if we'll make it all the way to his studio without speaking. 13, 14, 15.
What are you thinking?
He asks quietly. I stop counting our steps because I'm not walking anymore. Owen isn't walking either because Owen is standing directly in front of me, looking at me with those big, noticeable Owen eyes this haircut just created. I'm not spending the weekend with you. I can't believe you would even suggest that. He shakes his head.
I didn't suggest it. Your inappropriate roommate did. I just said I liked the idea of it.
I huff and fold my arms tightly over my chest. I look down at the sidewalk between us and try to figure out why I'm so mad right now. Walking away from him won't make me any less mad because that's actually the problem. Thinking about spending the weekend with him excites me, and the fact that I can't come up with a reason as to why it's a bad idea is pissing me off. I guess I still feel like he owes me more of an explanation, or more of an apology. If Harrison hadn't called him last night, I'd have probably never heard from or seen him again. That's a little bit crushing to my self-confidence, so I find it hard to just accept that he suddenly wants to spend time with me. I unfold my arms and rest my hands on my hips, then look up at him. Why didn't you at least let me know you were moving before standing me up? I know he tried to explain himself earlier, but it wasn't good enough, because I'm still upset about it. Sure, he may not have wanted to start anything if he was moving, but if that's really the case, he never should have told me he'd come back the next night. His expression doesn't waver, but he does take a step closer.
I didn't show up the next night because I like you.
I close my eyes and drop my head in disappointment. That's such a dumb answer, I mutter. He takes another step closer, and he's right there, right in front of me. When he speaks again, his voice is so low I can feel it in my stomach.
I knew I was moving, and I like you. Those two things don't make a very good combination. I should have let you know I wasn't coming back, but I didn't have your number.
Nice try. You knew where I lived. He gives no response to that comeback other than a sigh. He shifts on his feet, and I finally allow my eyes to make the brave journey to his face. He actually looks very apologetic, but I know better than to trust the expression on a man's face. The only things worth trusting are actions, and so far he hasn't proven very trustworthy.
I messed up,
he says.
I'm sorry.
At least he's not giving me an excuse. I guess it takes a little bit of honesty to be able to admit when you're wrong, even if you aren't very forthcoming with the why. He has that going for him. I'm not sure when he moved this close to me, but he's so close, really close, that to passerby, it would look like either we're in the middle of a breakup or we're about to make out. I step around him and begin walking again until we reach his studio. I'm not sure why I stop when we reach his door. I should keep going. I should be walking all the way to my apartment, but I'm not. He unlocks his door and glances over his shoulder to make sure I'm still here. I shouldn't be. I should be separating myself from what I know could be two of the best days I've had in a long time, but will be followed by one of the worst Mondays I've had in a long time. If I spend the weekend with him, it'll feel just like how drinking went for me last night. It'll be fun and exciting while it's happening, and I'll forget about everything else while I'm with him. But then Monday will come. He'll move, and I'll have an Owen hangover that'll be so much worse than the Owen hangover I'll have if I would just walk away from him right now. He opens the door to his studio, and a blast of cool air surrounds me, luring me in. I look inside, and then at Owen. He can see the apprehension in my eyes, and he reaches down for my hand. He walks me into the studio, and for some reason, I don't resist. The door closes behind us, and we're engulfed by the darkness. I listen for the echo of my heart, because I'm certain it's beating loud enough to hear one. I can feel him standing close to me, but neither of us is moving. I can hear his breaths. I feel his closeness. I smell the clean scent of conditioner mixed with whatever makes him smell like rain.
Is it the thought of spending the weekend with someone you barely know that's making you doubt this? Or is it just the thought of spending the weekend with me in particular?
I'm not scared because it's you, Owen. I'm considering it because it's you. He takes a step back, and my eyes have adjusted enough to the darkness that I can see his face clearly now. He's hopeful, excited, smiling. How can I say no to that face? What if I agree to just spend the day with you for right now, and we'll go from there? He laughs at my suggestion, as if he thinks it's silly that I wouldn't want to stay the entire weekend after spending the day with him.
"That's cute, Auburn," he says. "But okay."
His grin is huge when he pulls me to him. He wraps his arms around me and lifts me off the floor, squeezing the breath out of me. He sets me back down and pushes open the door.
"Come on, let's go to Target."
I pause. "Target?" He smiles and adjusts his cap on my head as he pushes me out into the sunlight again.
"I don't have anything to feed you. We're going grocery shopping."
Chapter 10. Owen. I'm losing track of the lies I'm telling her, and lying to someone like her isn't normally something I would do. But I didn't know how to tell her the truth. I was scared to let her go, and scared to admit that I'm not actually moving on Monday, because the truth is, I'll be in court on Monday. And after my hearing, I'll be in either jail or rehab, depending on who gets his way, me or Callahan Gentry. When my father stopped by the studio this morning, I was careful not to say too much because I knew Auburn might be listening. But keeping my cool was harder than I thought it would be. I just wanted him to see what this is doing to me. I wanted to grab his hand and pull him up the stairs and point down at her sleeping on my bed. I wanted to say, "Look at her, Dad. Look at what your selfishness is costing me." Instead, I did what I always do. I allowed the memories of my mother and my brother to talk me out of standing up to him. They're my excuse. They're his excuse. They've been our excuse for the last several years, and I'm afraid if I don't find a way to stop using that night as my excuse, then Callahan and Owen Gentry will never be father and son again. Nothing has made me want to stop this way of life like she has, though. As much as I've tried, and as much as I've thought about it, and as much as it defeats me every time my guilt wins, I've never felt stronger than I feel when I'm with her. I've never felt like I had purpose like I feel when I'm with her. I think about the first words I said to her when she showed up at my door. "Are you here to save me?" Because are you, Auburn? It sure feels that way, and it's been a long time since I've felt any semblance of hope. "Where are you going?" she asks me. Her voice could be used as a form of therapy. I'm convinced of that. She could walk into a room full of severely depressed people, and all she would have to do to heal them is open a book and read out loud. "Target." She shoves my shoulder and laughs, and I'm glad to see this side of her is back. She's hardly laughed all day. "I don't mean right now, dummy. I mean Monday. Where are you going? Why are you moving?" I glance across the street. I look up at the sky. I focus on my feet. I look everywhere but into her eyes, because I don't want to lie to her again. I've already lied to her once today, and I can't do it again. I reach out and take her hand in mine. She lets me, and the simple fact that I know she wouldn't let me hold her hand if she knew the truth makes me regret ever having lied to her in the first place. But the longer I wait to admit the truth, the harder it becomes. "Auburn, I don't really want to answer that question, okay?" I continue to stare at my feet, not wanting her to see in my face that I think she's crazy for agreeing to spend the weekend with me, because she deserves so much better than what I can give her. I don't, however, think she deserves better than me. I think she would be perfect for me, and I would be perfect for her. But all the bad choices I've made in my life are what she doesn't deserve to be a part of. So until I can figure out how to right all my wrongs, 2 days with her is all I'm really worthy of. And I know she said we would focus on today first before she decides to spend the entire weekend, but I think we both know that's bullshit. She squeezes my hand. "If you aren't going to tell me why you're moving away, then I'm not going to tell you why I ended up moving here." I was hoping to learn everything there is to know about her this weekend. I had questions lined up and ready to be fired, and now I have to withdraw, because there's no way in hell I'm telling her about my life. Not right now, anyway. "That's fair," I say, finally able to look at her again. She smiles and squeezes my hand again, and I can't fucking take how beautiful you look right now, Auburn. Free of worry, free of anger, free of guilt. The wind blows a piece of her hair across her mouth, and she pulls it away with her fingertips. I'm going to paint this moment later, but right now I'm taking her to Target for groceries because she's staying with me all weekend. She's modest in a lot of areas, but definitely not when it comes to her food. I know she understands that she'll only be at my house for 2 days, but she's grabbed enough food to last 2 weeks. I let her, though, because I want this to be the best weekend she's ever had, and frozen pizza and cereal will definitely help me make that happen. I think we're good. She's looking down at the cart, digging through it, making sure she got everything she wanted. We'll have to take a cab back to your place, though. We can't carry all this. I turn the cart around right before we hit the checkout line. We forgot something, I say.
How?
We bought the entire store. I head in the opposite direction. Your birthday present. I expect her to run up behind me and protest, like most girls would probably do. Instead, she starts clapping. I think she must have just squealed, too. She grabs my arm with both hands and says,
"How much can I spend?"
Her excitement reminds me of one of the times my father took Carrie and me to Toys R Us. Carrie was 2 years older, but our birthdays were only a week apart. Our father used to do things like that, back when Callahan Gentry knew how to be a father. I remember one particular trip. He wanted to turn the present buying into a game. He told us to pick an aisle number and a shelf number and said we could pick anything we wanted from that particular shelf. Carrie went first, and we wound up on the Lego aisle, which was typical of Carrie's good luck. When it was my turn, I didn't fare so well. My numbers put us on the Barbie aisle, and to say I was upset is an understatement. Carrie was the type of brother who, when he wasn't beating me up, was fiercely protective of me. He looked at my father and said, "What if he reversed the numbers? Maybe instead of aisle 4 and shelf 3, we're supposed to be on shelf 4 and aisle 3. My father grinned proudly. "That's pretty lawyerly of you, Carrie." We moved over to aisle 3, which was the sports aisle. I don't even remember what I ended up choosing. I just remember the day and how, despite that moment of terror in the Barbie aisle, it ended up being one of my favorite memories of the three of us. I take her hand in mine, and I stop pushing the buggy. "Pick an aisle number." She arches an eyebrow and glances behind her, trying to peek at the aisle signs, so I block her view. "No cheating. Pick an aisle number and a shelf number. I'll buy you anything you want off the shelf we end up at." She smiles. She likes this game. "Lucky 13, she says to me. "But how do I know how many shelves there are?" "Just guess. You might get lucky." She squeezes her bottom lip between her thumb and forefinger, concentrating her gaze on me. "If I say shelf 1, would that be considered the top shelf or the bottom?"
"Bottom."
She smiles and her eyes light up.
"Row 13, shelf number 2 it is."
She's so excited I would think she's never been given a gift before. She also bites her bottom lip to keep from appearing as excited as she is. God, she's adorable. I turn around, and we're standing on the opposite side of the store from aisle 13. "Looks like either sporting goods or electronics." She jumps a little and says,
"Or jewelry."
Oh, shit. Jewelry is close to electronics. This may be the most expensive birthday present I've ever bought. She lets go of my hand and grabs the end of the cart, pulling it faster.
"Hurry up, Owen."
If I knew birthday presents made her this excited, I would have bought her one the day I met her, and every day since then. We're still walking toward aisle 13 when we pass jewelry, then electronics, eliminating both of those possibilities. We pause on aisle 12, and even though we're standing in front of sporting goods, she still looks excited.
"I'm so nervous," she says,
tiptoeing toward aisle 13. She rounds the corner first and peeks down the aisle. She looks back at me and breaks out into a huge grin.
"Tense!"
And then she disappears. I follow after her and round the corner with the cart, but she's already pulling one off the shelf.
"I want this one,"
she says with excitement. But then she pushes it back on the shelf.
"No, no, I want this one,"
she mumbles to herself.
"Blue is his favorite color."
She grabs the blue one and I would help her, but I'm not sure I can move just yet. I'm still trying to absorb her words. Blue is his favorite color. I want to ask her who he is, and why she's thinking about camping with someone whose favorite color is blue, blue, nothing but blue. But I don't say anything because I don't have a right to say anything. She's giving me 2 days, not forever. 2 days. That won't be enough for me, Auburn. I can already tell. And whoever's favorite color is blue won't stand a chance in this tent, because I'm about to make sure that the only thing she ever thinks about when she sees a tent again is, oh my God. I get all the groceries loaded into the taxi and turn around to grab the tent. She takes it from my hands before I can put it in the trunk.
I'll carry this. I want to go to my apartment for a little while before I go to yours, so I'll just take it with me.
I glance at the groceries and then back at her. Why? I shut the trunk and watch her cheeks flush when she shrugs.
Can you just drop me off there first? I'll meet you at your apartment in a couple of hours.
I don't want to drop her off. She might change her mind. Yeah, I say. Sure. I walk around to the back and open the door for her. I think she can tell that I don't want her to go home, but I'm trying to hide my disappointment. When I get into the cab, I grab her hand and close the door. She tells the cab driver her address. I'm looking out the window when I feel her squeeze my hand.
Owen?
I face her, and her smile is so sweet it makes my jaw ache.
I just really want to shower and grab some clothes before I come over. But I promise I'm still coming over, okay?
Her expression is reassuring. I nod, still not sure that I believe her. This may be her way of getting back at me for standing her up. She can still see the hesitation in my eyes, so she laughs.
Owen Mason Gentry,
she says, pushing the tent out of her lap and onto the seat next to her. She slides onto my lap, and I grab her waist, not at all sure where she's going with this, but not really concerned enough to stop it. She looks me in the eyes while holding on to both sides of my face.
You better stop pouting and doubting.
I grin. That rhymed. She laughs loudly. And have I mentioned I love her? No, I haven't, because that would be crazy and impossible.
I'm the queen of rhyming, she says with a grin. It's all about the timing.
Her hands drop to my chest and she looks up at the roof of the car for a second, contemplating her next line before dropping her gaze to mine again.
So trust me, Owen, my desire for you is growing.
She's trying to be seductive, and it's working, but she also can't stop laughing at herself, which is even better. The cab comes to a stop in front of her apartment. She starts to reach for the tent, but I grab her face and pull her back to me, moving my lips to her ear. So go take your shower. Come back over in an hour. Then you, Auburn Mason Reed, I will completely devour. When I pull back and look at her, her smile is gone. She swallows dramatically, and her reaction to my words makes me grin. I push open the back door, and she breaks out of her trance.
You're such a one-upper, Owen.
She leans across the seat and reaches for her tent. After she exits the cab, I smile at her, and she smiles at me, but neither of us tells the other goodbye. I'm only saying goodbye to her once, and that won't be until Monday morning. I'm about to ring her doorbell. I know it's only been an hour, and she hasn't even had time to make it back to my studio, but I couldn't stop thinking about her walking all that way by herself. I hate that she makes that walk twice a day when she goes to work. I don't want to rush her, though, and I don't want it to feel like I'm showing up because I doubt her. Maybe I should sit on the stairs and wait for her to open the door. That way, it'll look like I got here just as she was leaving. And also, if she never opens her door, then I'll know in a couple hours that she changed her mind. If that happens, I can just leave, and she won't even know I was here in the first place. But what if she already left, and I just missed her because she took a cab? She could be at my place, and now I've made the idiotic decision to show up at her place. Shit!
Do you want to come inside?
I quickly turn, and Emery is standing in the doorway, staring at me. She's holding her purse in one hand and her keys in the other. Is Auburn still here? Emery nods and holds the door open wider. She's in her room. She just got out of the shower. I hesitate, not feeling comfortable entering her apartment without her knowing. Emery can see the hesitation on my face, so she leans back into the apartment. Auburn! That guy you should totally sleep with is here. Not the cop, the other one. The cop. Emery faces me again and nods her head like she's saying you're welcome. I would say I like her, but every time she speaks, she's bringing up the other guy. I wonder if he's the one who likes the color blue. I hear Auburn groan from inside the apartment.
I swear to God, Emery, you need to take a class on social skills.
She appears in the doorway, and Emery ducks out, heading for the exit. Her hair is damp, and she's changed clothes. She's still in jeans and a simple top, but they're different from the ones she had on earlier. I like that she's so casual. She's eyeing me up and down.
It hasn't even been an hour, Mr. Impatient.
She doesn't seem annoyed, which is good. She motions for me to come inside, so I follow her into the apartment. I was going to wait outside, I say. She walks into her bedroom and walks back out with a backpack. She tosses it on the bar and turns and looks at me expectantly. I was bored, I say. I thought I'd walk with you to my studio. Her lips curl up into a grin.
You're way too into me, Owen. Monday won't be good for you.
She says this like she's kidding, but she has no idea how right she is.
Oh!
She turns toward the living room and retrieves the tent from the couch.
Help me set up the tent before we go.
She walks toward her bedroom with the tent in her hands.
It's tiny. It won't take long.
I shake my head, completely confused as to why she wants to set up a tent in her bedroom. But she doesn't seem bothered by it, so I don't question her. Because what girl doesn't deserve a tent in her bedroom?
I want it over here.
She points to a spot close to her bed as she kicks a yoga mat out of the way. I look around her room, trying to see what I can figure out about her without having to ask questions. There aren't any pictures on her walls or her dresser, and her closet door is shut. It's like she decided one day that she was leaving Portland and she didn't bring a single thing with her when she came. I wonder why that is. Is this not a permanent move for her? I help her unpack the tent. I didn't notice at the store, but it really is a small tent. It fits two people and has an optional divider down the middle of it. We have it set up in less than 5 minutes, but simply setting it up isn't good enough for her, apparently. She walks to her closet and grabs two blankets that are on the top shelf. She lays them down in the tent and crawls inside.
Grab two pillows off my bed, she says. We have to lie in it for a few minutes before we leave.
I grab the pillows and kneel down in front of the tent. I push them inside and she takes them from me. I pull the flap back and crawl in with her, but I go to my side instead of doing what I really want to do, which is crawl on top of her. I'm too big for the tent and my feet hang out of it, but so do hers. I think you bought a tent for fictional characters. She shakes her head and lifts up onto her elbow.
I didn't buy it. You bought it. And it's a kid's tent, Owen. Of course we don't fit.
Her eyes move to the zipper hanging from the top of the tent.
Look.
She grabs it and begins zipping. A net lowers from the top, and she continues to zip up the sides of it until a mesh screen separates us. She lays her head on her arm and smiles at me.
Feels like we're in a confessional.
I roll onto my side and rest my head in my hand and stare back at her. Which one of us is confessing? She narrows her eyes and lifts her finger, pointing at me.
I think it's safe to say you owe the world a few more confessions of your own.
I lift my hand and touch her finger through the mesh. She opens up her palm and presses it against mine. We could be here all night, Auburn. I have a lot of confessions. I could tell her how I know her, make her realize why I have this overwhelming urge to protect her. But some secrets I'll take to my grave, and this is definitely one of them. Instead, I give her a different confession, one that doesn't mean as much to me. I give her something safe. I have three numbers in my phone, my father's, Harrison's,
my cousin Riley's, but I haven't talked to him in over 6 months. That's it. She's quiet. She doesn't know what to say, because who only has 3 numbers in his phone? Someone who has issues, obviously.
Why don't you have more phone numbers?
I like her eyes. They're very telling, and right now she hurts for me, because she realizes that she isn't the only lonely person in Dallas. After I graduated high school, I kind of went my own way. I focused on my art and nothing else. I lost all my old contacts when I switched phones about a year ago, and when that happened, I realized I didn't really talk to anyone. My grandparents passed away years ago. I only have one cousin, and like I said, we don't really talk much. Other than Harrison and my father, there isn't a phone number I need. Her fingers are tracing my palm now. She's staring at her hands and no longer at me.
Let me see your phone.
I pull it out of my pocket and hand it to her beneath the mesh, because I told her the truth. She can check for herself. 3 numbers, and that's it. Her fingers move over the screen for several seconds before she hands me back my phone.
There. Now you have 4.
I look down at my screen and read her contact. I laugh when I see the name she entered for herself. Auburn Mason is the best middle name. Reed. I slide my phone back in my pocket and touch her hand against the mesh again.
Your turn, I say to her.
She shakes her head.
You still have a lot of catching up to do. Keep going.
I sigh and roll onto my back. I don't want to tell her anything else yet, but I'm scared if we don't get out of this tent soon, I'll tell her everything I know and everything she doesn't want to hear. But maybe it's best that way. Maybe if I tell her the truth, she can accept it and trust me and know that as soon as I get back, things will be different. Maybe if I tell her the truth, we'll have a chance of making it beyond Monday. That night I didn't show up here? I pause, because my heart is beating so fast, I'm finding it hard to think around it. I know I need to admit this to her, but I haven't known how to bring it up. No matter how I spin it, I know she'll react negatively, and I get that, but I'm tired of not being honest with her. I roll onto my side and face her. I open my mouth to confess, but I'm spared by the knock on her front door. Her confused expression reveals that she isn't used to visitors.
I need to get that. Wait here.
She immediately climbs out of the tent, and I roll onto my back and exhale. In a matter of seconds, she's back in her room and kneeling down in front of the tent.
Owen!
Her voice is frantic, and I lift up on my elbows as she pokes her head inside. Her eyes are full of worry.
I have to get the door, but please don't come out of my room, okay? I'll explain everything as soon as she leaves, I promise.
I nod, hating the fear in her voice. I also hate that she suddenly wants to hide me from whoever is at her door. She backs away and closes the bedroom door. I fall back onto the pillow and listen, aware that I'm about to get one of her confessions, even though she doesn't quite seem ready to share it with me. I hear the front door open, and the first thing I hear is a child's voice.
Mommy, look! Look what Nana Lydia bought me!
And then I hear her respond,
Wow! That's exactly the one you wanted.
Did he just call you Mommy? I hear feet shuffling across the floor. I hear a woman's voice say,
I know this is last minute, but we were supposed to leave for Pasadena hours ago. However, my mother-in-law was admitted to the hospital and Trey is on duty.
Oh no, Lydia,
Auburn interrupts.
Oh, she's fine. Diabetic issues again, which wouldn't happen if she'd just take care of herself like I tell her. But she doesn't, and then expects the entire family to give up their plans in order to take care of her.
I hear a doorknob turning. AJ, no, I hear Auburn say. Stay out of Mommy's room. Anyway, the woman says, I have to take some things to her, but they don't allow children in the ICU, so I need you to watch them for a couple of hours.
Of course, she says. Here?
Yes, I don't have time to drive you to our house.
Okay.
She says. She sounds excited. She sounds like she's not used to the woman trusting her to do this. She's so excited, I don't think she notices AJ is opening her bedroom door again.
I'll pick him up later tonight, the woman says.
He can spend the night, Auburn replies, hopeful. I'll bring him back in the morning.
Her bedroom door is open now, and a little boy falls to his knees directly in front of the tent. I lift up on my elbows and smile at him, because he's smiling at me.
Why are you in a tent? He asks.
I bring my finger up to my mouth.
Shh.
He grins and crawls inside the tent. He looks to be about 4 or 5 years old, and his eyes aren't green like Auburn's. They're all different colors, browns and grays and greens, like a canvas. He doesn't have her unique shade of hair color, as his is dark brown. I'm assuming he gets that from his father, but I still see a lot of Auburn in him, mostly in his expression and how he seems so curious.
Is the tent a secret?
He asks. I nod. Yes, and no one knows this tent is here, so we need to keep it between us, okay? He smiles and nods, like he's excited to have a secret.
I can keep secrets.
That's good, I say to him, because it's not muscles that make men strong, secrets do. The more secrets you keep, the stronger you are on the inside. He grins. I want to be strong. I'm about to tell him to go back to the living room before any attention is brought to me, but I can hear the opening of the bedroom door. AJ, come give Nana Lydia a hug, the woman says. Her footsteps grow louder, and AJ's eyes grow wide. Lydia, wait, I hear Auburn say to her with panic in her voice. But she says it a second too late, because I don't have time to pull my feet inside the tent before Lydia walks into the room. I can see her steps come to an immediate halt. I don't have to see her face to know that she's not very happy about the fact that AJ is in this tent right now. AJ, her voice is firm. Come out of that tent, sweetie. AJ grins at me and puts his finger to his mouth.
I'm not in a tent, Nana Lydia. There's no tent in here.
Lydia, I can explain, Auburn says, bending down. She motions for AJ to come out of the tent, and her eyes only meet mine for a second. He's just a friend. He was helping me put up this tent for AJ. AJ, let's go, honey. Lydia grabs his hand, pulling him out of the tent. You may be okay with allowing your son to be around complete strangers, but I'm not. I can see the disappointment wash over Auburn. It washes over AJ, too, when he realizes Lydia isn't letting him stay. I follow after him, crawling out of the tent, standing up. It's fine, I'll go, I say. We just finished setting it up for him. Lydia looks me up and down, unimpressed with whatever she thinks she sees. I want to eye her the same way, but I don't want to do anything to make this worse for Auburn. When I get a good look at her, I realize I've seen her before. It's been a while, but she hasn't changed a bit, other than having a little more gray in her straight black hair. She still looks just as stoic and intimidating as she did all those years ago. She faces AJ. AJ, get your toy. We need to go. Auburn follows Lydia out of the room. Lydia, please. She waves her hand in my direction. He's leaving. It'll just be me and AJ here, I promise. Lydia's hand pauses on the front door, and she turns to face Auburn. She releases a quick sigh. You can see him Sunday night, Auburn. Really, it's fine. I should have known not to stop by unannounced. She looks over Auburn's shoulder to AJ. Tell your mother goodbye, AJ. I can see Auburn grimace, and then just as fast, her frown turns into a smile as she turns around and kneels down in front of AJ. She pulls him to her and hugs him. I'm sorry, but you're going to go with Nana Lydia tonight, okay? She pulls away from him and brushes her hand through his hair. I'll see you Sunday night.
But I want to stay here,
he says with genuine disappointment. Auburn tries to hide it with her smile, but I can see how his words have gutted her. She ruffles his hair and says,
Another night, okay? Mommy has to get up really early and work tomorrow, and you won't have any fun if all we do is go to sleep.
It'll be fun, he says. He points toward the bedroom.
You have a tent, and we could sleep in...
AJ's eyes cut to mine, and he realizes he just mentioned the secret tent.
He looks back at Auburn and shakes his head. Never mind. You don't have a tent. I was wrong. You don't. As shitty as I feel about what's happening right now, the kid makes me smile. AJ, let's go. Auburn gives him another tight hug and whispers, I love you. I'll love you forever. She kisses his forehead and he kisses her cheek before taking Lydia's hand. Auburn doesn't even turn around to tell Lydia goodbye, and I don't blame her one bit. As soon as the door closes, she stands and brushes past me, heading straight to her bedroom. I watch as she pulls back the flap and crawls into the tent. I stand at her door and listen to her cry. It all makes sense now. Why she was so upset that Lydia stood her up on her birthday, because that meant she didn't get to spend it with AJ. Why she said his favorite color is blue. Why she moved to Texas when she seemed so unhappy here. And why there is no way in hell I'll be able to walk away from her now. Not after witnessing that. Not after seeing how incredible she is when she loves that little boy.
Chapter 11. Auburn. I hear the partition being unzipped, and then I feel a hand on my arm, followed by an arm sliding beneath my pillow. Owen pulls me against him, and I immediately want to pull away, but at the same time, I'm surprised at the level of comfort I feel wrapped in his arms. I close my eyes and wait for his questions to come. I'll just lie here and enjoy the comfort until he strips it away with his curiosity. His hand moves up and down my arm, stroking me gently. After several minutes of silence, he finds my fingers and slides his through mine.
When I was 16, he says quietly, my mother and older brother died in a car wreck. I was driving.
I squeeze my eyes shut. I can't even imagine. Suddenly my issues don't seem like issues at all.
My father was in a coma for several weeks after that. I stayed by his side the entire time, not because I necessarily wanted to be there when he woke up, but because I didn't know where else to go. Our home was empty. My friends had lives they continued to live, so I rarely saw them after the funeral. I had relatives who would stop by in the beginning, but even that faded. By the end of that first month, it was just my father and me, and I was terrified that if he died too, I wouldn't have anything left to live for.
I slowly roll onto my back and look up at him. What happened? Owen reaches his fingers to my forehead and brushes back my hair.
He lived, obviously,
he says quietly.
He woke up right before the one-month anniversary of the wreck, and as happy as I was that he was okay, I don't think reality sank in until I had to tell him what happened. He couldn't recall anything from the day leading up to the wreck, nor could he recall anything after that point. And when I had to tell him that my mother and Carrie were dead, I saw it. I saw the life seep right out of his eyes, and I haven't seen it return since the night it happened.
I wipe tears from my eyes. I'm so sorry, I tell him. He shakes his head like he doesn't need my condolences.
Don't be,
he says to me.
It's not something I dwell on. The wreck wasn't my fault. Of course, I miss them, and it hurts every day, but I also know that life has to go on, and my mother and Carrie weren't the type of people who would want me to use their deaths as an excuse.
His fingers move gently back and forth across my jaw. He's not looking me in the eyes. He's looking beyond me, over my head, contemplating.
Sometimes I miss them so much, it hurts me right here,
he says, making a tight fist with his hand against his chest.
It feels like someone is squeezing my heart with the strength of the entire goddamn world.
I nod because I know exactly what he means. I feel that way every time I think of AJ and the fact that he's not living with me.
Every time I get that feeling in my chest, I start to think about the things I miss most about them. Like my mother and the way she used to smile at me. Because no matter what, no matter where we were, her smile would always comfort me. We could have been in the middle of a war, and all she had to do was kneel down and look me in the eyes with that smile, and it would take away every single fear or worry I had. And somehow, even on her bad days, when I know she didn't feel like smiling, she would anyway. Because to her, Nothing else mattered but my happiness. And I miss that. Sometimes I miss it so much the only way I can make myself feel better is to paint her.
He laughs under his breath.
I have about 20 paintings of my mother stowed away. It's kind of creepy.
I laugh with him, but seeing how much he loves his mother puts the ache back in my chest, and my laugh turns into a frown. It makes me wonder if AJ will ever feel that for me, since I'm not able to be the type of mother I want to be to him right now. Owen cups my cheek in his hand and looks me very seriously in the eyes.
I saw the way you looked at him, Auburn. I saw the way you smiled at him. You smiled at him the same way my mother used to smile at me. And I don't care what that woman may think of you as a mother. I barely know you, and I could feel how much you love that little boy.
I close my eyes and let his words seep over every doubtful thought I've ever had when it comes to my abilities as a mom. I've been a mother for over 4 years now. 4. And in those 4 years, Owen is the first person to ever say anything that makes me feel like I'm capable of being a good mother. And even though he hardly knows me, and he doesn't know a thing about my situation, I can feel the belief he holds in the words he's saying to me. The simple fact that he believes what he's saying makes me want to believe it too. Really? I say quietly. I open my eyes and look up at him. Because sometimes I feel like... He cuts me off with an adamant shake of his head.
Don't, he says firmly. I don't know your situation, and I assume if you wanted me to know, you would have told me, so I'm not going to ask. But I can tell you that what I just witnessed was a woman who takes advantage of your insecurities. Don't allow her to make you feel that way, Auburn. You're a good mother. A good mother.
Another tear escapes, and I quickly turn my head away. I know in my heart that I could be a good mother if Lydia would give me the chance. I know that the way things have turned out isn't my fault. I was 16 and unprepared when I had him, but I never knew how good it could feel for someone else to believe in me. Finding out about AJ could have sent Owen out the door in a flash. Finding out I don't have custody of my son could have filled him with misjudgments about me. Neither of those things happened, though. Instead, he used this opportunity to encourage me, to make me feel better, and no one has made me feel this way since the day Adam passed away. Thank you just doesn't seem like enough. So instead of speaking, I face him again. He's still hovering over me, looking down on me. I reach my hand up and around the back of his head, and I lift my mouth to his. I kiss him softly, and he does nothing to try to stop it, nor does he try to prolong it. He just accepts the kiss as he inhales slowly. I don't part my lips, and neither of us attempts to take the kiss further. I think we both know that this kiss was more of a thank you than an I want you. When I pull away, his eyes are closed and he looks as peaceful as he just made me feel. I lie back against the pillow and watch as he slowly opens his eyes. A smile forms on his lips and he lies down next to me, both of us staring up at the top of the tent. His father was my first boyfriend, I say, explaining my situation to him. It feels good to tell him. I don't tell a lot of people much, but I want to tell Owen everything for some reason. He passed away when I was 15. 2 weeks later, I found out I was pregnant with AJ. When my parents found out, they wanted me to put him up for adoption. They had 4 other children to care for besides me, and it was hard enough for them to put food on the table for all of us.